I'm so excited to share with you that the doors are officially open for my first ever phone-free event that's happening in Los Angeles, California on February 28th at Mudwater Gather in Santa Monica, with the option for you to dive even deeper on March 1st. Now look, this event is about you. It's about you building connections and community and us all really bringing this analog revolution to life and reminding our hearts and souls what we truly crave most, what nourishes our being, which is co-regulating with other humans, having our mirror neurons dance together, sharing experiences together, but also learning together. So on top of all the community and connection possibilities for you, there's also an incredible lineup of speakers. I've got internationally renowned nervous system expert Sarah Baldwin, Nike master trainer Brandon Collingsworth talking about purpose and meaning, and Mandy Balak, who's the president of the Gathering Festival, which is one of the largest marketing and branding conferences in North America. So we're going to be diving deeper into what does the future look like to walk alongside technology and use technology as a tool. Now look, if you want to dive even deeper, there's limited space for a VIP dinner on the Saturday night. And if you want to go even deeper, if it's aligned for leaders, coaches, therapists, entrepreneurs, branding, marketing, whoever is called, there's a mastermind on the Sunday morning with even more limited seating. And that's going to be about what does the future look like to create in this world with technology. So if this sounds like something you're interested in, you want to find out more and save your spot, go to markgroves.com/future. I can't wait to see you there.
So the announcement is that Kylie and I.
Hi, I'm Mark Groves. I'm a human connection specialist and founder of Create the Love. At an early point in my life, I became obsessed with understanding relationships, the intricacies of how people connect. And through this exploration, I have created a life and a business dedicated to learning out loud and exploring how we interact with each other and the world. This podcast brings the world's top thought leaders, spiritual luminaries, physicians, scientists, researchers, best-selling authors, and health and wellness experts under one roof to discuss the good, the bad, the messy, and of course, the beautiful parts of the human experience. Welcome to the Mark Groves Podcast. I can't wait to dive in with you.
Hello, Kylie McBeth. Welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, love. Good to be here.
It's been a while.
Yeah, I was thinking about that this morning. I was like, when was the last time I was on the pod? Had to be 3 years ago. No,
we broke up 3 years ago and got back together in that time. So we've had a couple podcasts since then.
No, I feel like at least 2 years ago. Come on.
No.
Yes.
No, we did. The last one we did was in Idaho. Let It Burn Part 2, I think, was the last time. So that was like a year and a half. Yeah, how long have we been back together?
This is the third year of COVID, babe.
Just fuck, FYI. It's all one moment. It's all just one fucking moment.
I'm like, your timeline is a little scary.
That has collapsed a lot of timelines.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know? It's like just like immersed in the never-ending washing machine of emotional, social trauma.
Yeah.
But alas.
Here we are.
All right. So We got you back on. She hasn't been avoiding the podcast. But we do have some exciting news. Actually, first, before we get into the exciting news, what's happened in the last 2 years, babe? What's been going on? You haven't been on in 2 years, so.
What's been going on?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. A lot. And yeah. It's been a beautiful couple of years.
The real call to community.
Yeah.
I think everyone's been feeling that.
I mean, we've had some major shifts in the last couple of years, and I think a lot of people listening can probably resonate with that. You and I have been traveling in between countries, navigating a global pandemic. So I feel like that's taken up a lot of space personally. But professionally, I've been doing some of the same work that I always do in terms of women's empowerment and really engaging with other souls who are ready to liberate themselves from codependent dynamics and the shackles of shame and all the gnarly stuff that keeps us small and powerless. So it's been fun.
It's been fun. It's such a ride liberating ourselves from those things.
Yeah, it's always worth it though.
Oh yeah. You know, I was thinking the other day, just about, you know, people we know that are facing hard decisions, impossible. And I'm sure for you listening, watching, you know people or might be a person who is facing a hard, impossible, seemingly impossible decision. And I was thinking about how many we've faced together and also separately that led us to each other, which I think that's what's really fascinating about the impossible decisions is that when you're in them, it's like, of course, there's a death that is occurring, the death of whatever you're deciding to let go of, move on from, move deeper into, whatever the journey is. But you don't realize what's on the other side. You know, you don't realize where it's bringing you.
Right. I remember one of the moments that comes to mind in terms of that, like, point in life where you're like, everything's kind of crumbling and you have to make a decision, or you've already made the decision, or the decision has been made for you, which is a little bit more of a comfortable or an uncomfortable ride. Mm-hmm. I don't recommend that way anymore, but I definitely have had to learn through that way of like, until there is no other choice but to make the choice.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
But I remember I was on a call with two of my mentors and I was like, why me? Like, just having a full-on existential tantrum. Like, why can't it be easy? Why can't I just have the relationship and move about my life like everybody else is? And one of the women that I was talking to was two mentors. One was in her early 40s and the other one was in her 60s. And so, you know, they've walked through their own fires. You know, they've been through some personal initiations. So they're just like holding a beautiful space for my like inner maiden temper tantrum experience. And eventually at the end of it, they looked at me and they're like, you know, Kai, it's because you're not here for normal. And there was a part of me that was relieved to hear that. And then there was another part of me that was like, but I just want normal. Like, I just want it to be easy. Right. But here's what I will say in that is the more I'm devoted to truth, and whatever that capital T truth is for me at any moment, and where my soul is guiding me, the easier it has become to like just continue to live in that way, to live in integrity where my internal world matches my external world, where I feel coherent. I don't feel internally split or ambivalent. It's like I'm so committed, and I know you are as well, to living in alignment, that after you go through all of the hurdles to even find what that is for yourself, life seems to move with more ease. That doesn't mean there isn't challenges, but it just means like I know I'm unconditionally okay no matter what. You know, I know that I have the resources, the skills, the internal foundation of trust and competency to be okay no matter what I'm met with. And that's priceless.
That is. I think our journeys relationally and in life are inviting us to figure out how to feel that way. You know, how to feel a sense of self-trust, knowing that in the impossible moments, the impossible choices, the things that we're being called towards that we don't want to be called towards, or the answers that we ask for and then we get them and we're like, not that one. Like, I didn't want that as the answer. And even if we act upon something, you know, like let's say we're being asked to leave a relationship, that's still not even like, if you make the choice and then you decide that you actually miss that person and want to work it out, it wasn't the wrong choice. It was actually the necessary choice to get to the awareness of where you can choose something fully.
Yeah.
You know, and that seems like a roundabout way to get there, because you're kind of like, well, why don't you just choose it the first time? I don't know. You know, I think so much of our journey, especially initially, to get to a place that you're talking about, where you're committed to living in a place of alignment with what feels, what is true for you, that we have to actually get to the place where are living in that. And most of us are not in the place where we're living in our capital T truth, or liberated from patterns or expectations of who we're meant to be. And, you know, I think that's what brings most people to this podcast. That's what brings most people to anyone's work about trying to understand relationships and life and creation. It's like, how do I just get, it's almost like, how do I get permission? how do I get permission? Which I don't give people permission. But I think when we get to, and if you want it, here it is. But it's like if we get to the where we observe someone else living in this idealized thought, I guess, of being in alignment or like zero fucks, we might see it from the outside. But there's plenty of fucks in the alignment zone. Is that we're like, it is possible.
Yeah. I'm reminded of a conversation I was having at a coffee shop in Vancouver a couple of years ago. And a gentleman, he was talking to me and he was, I don't know what I was talking about, but I was like, yeah, living in alignment. And he's like, what the F does that even mean? And so I always like hear that whenever I use that word or speak into this conversation.
It is very foreign.
Because, yeah, it's a concept until it becomes integrated and embodied. Like for so long, I would have thought that I was in alignment or at least, yeah, felt like I was at certain moments. But
I think that you don't know that you can live your life of your own volition till, which I think is alignment, you know, where you're taking responsibility for how you impact people, but you're not letting other people's experience of whatever your choice is hold you hostage. Because that's the prison that most people spend their lives in, you know, is that I don't want to end this or have this conversation or ruffle any feathers, because if I do, mom won't approve, dad won't like, you know, whatever it is, my partner won't, it gets too reactive. It's like we live in these prisons and, you know, to be able to get into alignment, which when you bring up your conversation at the coffee shop, I realize pre-getting into alignment, I've been like, all right, buddy, like, smoke some more marijuana. What are you talking about? But when your choices, I think it's that you just talked about it, when your internal world matches your external world, it's almost like you've freed what is in your shadow. You've processed or integrated or both the things that you feel most ashamed about. What do you think it is? To find alignment in 140 characters.
Yeah, the short and simple suite of it. I think there's a deep correlation between embodiment and alignment. Like we must be able to be in connection with our body, with our intuition, with our instincts, with our emotions, like have a really strong understanding of what's even happening internally.
Mm-hmm.
Because at least that level of emotional literacy or somatic literacy, body-based literacy or nervous system-based literacy, we can even just begin to even understand ourselves and like, what is the body communicating and how am I actually feeling? What are my actual needs? Because for so many of us, our consciousness is, majority of it is orienting around other. It's not even focused on the internal world because we're so busy hyper managing other people, other environments to source that sense of safety and security through trying to control, which, you know, I you and I have talked about, we're both historically really good at that, of trying to control our external reality to source that internal sense of safety. And unhooking from that and cultivating that internal felt sense of safety, I think, is the doorway back into a deeper connection with self and also just, you know, to be mindfully aware of what's happening in your internal world, as well as spiritually aware of, like, what's my soul saying? What's my intuition saying?
That's an abstract thought, though.
Which one?
Soul. I mean, all of it's abstract in a good way. But I mean, like, what is my soul saying? I agree with you. And to the guy in the coffee shop.
Listen, he's not my target audience, clearly.
He's not. He might be listening to this podcast, or there's someone who's listening who's like, okay, these, did they eat mushrooms before they started this?
But my whole path, you know me, I'm all about returning to the soul. So that's just.
Yeah, because I would consider the soul to be the call, like the authentic, the desire of what we truly want to do, who we truly want to be, how we want to serve. That's how I would define it. And as you said, we're mostly always oriented around other in our evolution, which evolutionarily makes sense, biologically, all those things together. And then from a control-based systems, that makes sense. So when we start to unshackle or unhook from those things, then we start to get a little more clarity, a little more possibility. I think modern day society, depending on where you live, does at least offer the opportunity to self-express and individuate. Again, really depending on where you live and depending on if you're in a worldwide pandemic, that you can talk about how you actually feel and disagree with mainstream systems, governments. You couldn't do that historically. Religions. You were just like locked in the prison of belief. Which, imagine how painful that was for so many people. And still is, because you could argue, I think, that social media has exacerbated all the things that we're talking about too, if not consciously approached.
Well, that's why contrast is such a beautiful teacher.
What do you mean?
In our human experience. Well, I think, you know, if we hadn't experienced the opposite of being limited or shackled by conditioning, by shame, by judgment, by the fear of exile, we wouldn't know how sweet it is on the other side. There's like a tension, like, you know, it feels like a benevolent friction. Like when you can see somebody living in alignment or from a liberated place where they, from the outside and hopefully from the inside, feel very secure, very confident and very secure in who they are, what they want, their desires, they're living their life, their enjoy. You can feel it. They're vital. They're alive, mm-hmm. right? It's only sometimes when you experience the exact opposite that you can appreciate their journey to the other side of like, you know what? I don't really want to live numbed out mm-hmm. or from this space of incongruency or from this space of survival anymore, because, you know, it's not comfortable. It's not enlivening. It's not all the things that you desire. Or at least that was for me. It was like, I can't sit in this space anymore. I can't continue to ignore what is actually happening in my internal world, because if I do, I'm going to continue to get sick.
It's ironic that we can go through like what you went through when you were younger and getting divorced and probably feeling very similar, and then get to another place where there's still like not a full, and I say this for you as I say for me too, that we get to a place where we just still haven't learned it. You know, we still haven't fully, like we left something or did something that was this impossible choice, this impossible, like, and I think of impossible choices being where you choose something for yourself at the cost of being liked, loved, or belonging, or all of those things. I was going to say reclamatory. Is that a word? It is now. Tension of like you make that thing, tension's not the right word, but you reclaim through a choice that proves that you have your own back, that like discernment, that trust in self, that you're not going to fold for other. And then if we find ourselves in a relationship together, having made choices like that previously, having deep desire to want to honor that within one another, and then the call be that we need to actually leave one another. You know, which is, we were talking about this the other day, but how because I had left a relationship and felt not loved, and not by anyone, not anyone's fault, but criticism from society, criticism from acquaintances, the pain I'd caused someone when I left. And I really just wanted someone to be like, I get it. Like, you're so loved. Like, I get that you couldn't choose this and you actually choosing this would not have actually been loving. I just so desperately wanted someone to be able to. And although I got versions of that, of course, from friends, I think it's, and parents, but it's very different to get it from the person you're saying, I can't choose this romantically. And when we needed to depart, I just recognized the love in your choice so much that I was like, no, you're so loved. Like, this doesn't end. The love doesn't end here. The container of the relationship, the shape of it changes. But the love is deeper because it withstands all this. You know, there's like a trust or a density to it. Not in a bad way, density, but in a, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Like it's etheric.
It's beyond.
Yeah. It's in another dimension. It's in the same dimension where the soul is talking, not at that coffee shop.
Right? You just, again, you never know where the choices will take you. I could have never predicted that, you know, the choice to end relationship 1.0, as we call it, and do the work that I did in between that and our second, what we call relationship 2.0, I could have never told you that this is the way it was going to turn out.
No.
Because you don't know. And that's why you have to lean in and trust.
What I will say is that there was a deep knowing that it was going to bring me further alive and further towards wherever I was supposed to end up.
Of course.
Even in the depths of I was watching a video, because I'm putting a little spoiler alert, everybody, putting together a new and improved breakup course. But in the doing of that, I was watching a video that I recorded from September of 2019 when we broke up. And even in it, I was like, obviously I've been going through some things, but love is so present. Like I knew even in the breaking there that there was so much love. And even in my grief, there was so much love. The interesting thing that when you think everything is over, or that you'll never find love again, or, you know, all the programming that we've gotten. Because if you're born into a family that lives in the forest, I don't think you think that. You know, in indigenous culture, I don't think we believe love ends. Although I'm not in one, so I guess I'm indigenous somewhere. Maybe in Irish culture. Oh, there's some good Irish poets that talk about a lot of love. But I digress. Yeah.
Well, that's just the power of actually receiving and opening and allowing love to flow through you is, you know, I think love and grief go hand in hand. The more we're able to grieve, the deeper and wider our capacity is to love. Mm-hmm. Because that grief is release. It's, you know, all the small d deaths, all the things that need to go and be moved through in order for our hearts to de-armor, for our bodies to open, for us to receive the beauty and magnificence and awe of love, of deeper levels of love. I always reflect on our rupture and I'm like, wow, that love pushed me so deep. Like, I loved you so much that I was so upset at whatever was in the way of my ability to receive the love. Or just, I was like, I want to clear out everything. I want to grieve. I just want to go into the depths and do the work that's necessary in order for me to open my heart, in order for me to trust myself and then to trust another. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, whatever's in the way, we got to do this now, because I could feel the limitation. I could feel my upper limit in love. And I was just like, I don't want to continue to feel this way. And there was a lot in the way. Stuff that, you know, we only could figure out after the rupture. But there was like so many, for me, historical and ancestral imprints and just deep, like, core attachment stuff that I couldn't get to in our relationship 1.0 dynamic that I was then invited into after the rupture, and then, of course, all the grief, all the rage, all of the feelings that had been suppressed were able to move through. And I was able to actually, what feels like, mature, like meet myself, meet and integrate parts of myself that had been unconsciously driving the car, if you will, for a long time. And it was like, no, it's... I'm not doing that anymore.
Hmm. Yeah, I felt that maturation process occur pretty much immediately with the willingness to let go. You know, when you make choices like that, and I'm sure for you listening, getting divorced, leaving a relationship, being left, you know, but choosing it together, you know, I know when we say, like, it was mutual, it's like, all right, who initiated the conversation? Because I think one person might be holding on a little more or have hope a little more, and none of that's wrong. But it really challenges every single construct of relational dance to say, this can end and we can actually still love each other. We can actually still treat each other with kindness and grace and generosity, but also have space for anger and sadness and grief. That the relationship actually also is the place where we heal, but we also heal narratives that you're not worthy if your relationship ends, or that love is no longer present, or that's the ultimate abandonment or fear of commitment, as opposed to that actually being a demonstration of love or a demonstration of commitment, you know?
Yeah, well, I think that's mature love. Mm-hmm. What you're describing is our ability to hold the complexity and nuance and full spectrum of human emotion. When we go through endings, completions, transitions in our lives, like, we don't revert back to blame, shame, judgment, guilt, because one, that keeps us powerless and in adolescent or an early adolescent state mentally and emotionally. Whereas moving into a mature adult, we can actually hold that. We can hold the love. We can hold the grief. We can hold the sadness. We can hold the anger.
Mm-hmm.
We can hold all of it. And that's such a gift for the repatterning of how we do endings. I always say, like, the greatest gift, one of the greatest gifts, and I know you've talked about this on the pod before, was our closing ceremony. And it wasn't just our closing ceremony and how we approached our ending. That was so deeply healing for me. It was actually in addition to that, because, yes, that was, I mean, I can't even describe that into words, but it was our community as well.
Yeah.
Our community, there was no exile. There was no judgment.
There wasn't even a split. Like, no one was like, oh, I'm on Mark's side or I'm on Kai's side. It was like, we're on love's side.
Right. And it was so powerful to go through that in a community where love, acceptance, belonging, compassion, understanding was present, was at the center of it all. Because we didn't have to re-experience exile or, you know, a splitting of sides or, you know, moving into what feels like a more immature way of approaching endings and completions. But what I will say is, obviously, you know, this is dependent on where you're at in your maturation process and the level of consciousness of your community. But again, there's no hierarchy. It's just our friends who are able to hold also the complexity and the capacity for both sides. And not even that there was any sides, but it was just like, nope. I remember one of our dearest friends, she messaged me and she was like, no one is upset with you. No one is mad at you. No one is. And I like was bawling and I was like, oh my gosh, these people still love me. Even when I'm having to make hard choices, even when these choices hurt other people they love.
Well, it's such the template we've been taught about if someone leaves, like they're to be villainized.
Yeah.
They're to close, board up the windows.
Right. And it's like, no, that actually was us choosing love. And yeah, so I'm so grateful for our community as well.
Yeah, I think there's that level of conscientiousness that exists. You know, I know you said, but I feel like conscientiousness. And I think if you've been through endings, then, you know, if other people in a community have been through endings, they know how painful they are and they know how important it is that people feel loved in the transitions. But I think often when people in communities haven't processed their own fears, their own pain, their own losses, they actually want to persecute people who model a similar template of wounding to their friend. And you're right. I mean, it is all necessary to get to the place where a community can become integrated and mature, initiated, as Francis Weller would say.
Yeah.
You know, that we become initiated as a community so that we see the traumas of our community, the pains of the community, as deepening the community, enriching the community. And certainly the breakup offered that. And all the things.
We've had so many things since then that continue to deepen us and ourselves and our community in really profound ways.
Yeah, well, speaking of deepening, for those of you listening who are like, all right, what the fuck was the special announcement at the beginning?
Mark took us on
I didn't even mean to
on a
keep
detour
going.
Into the importance of choice, embodied choice, and power choice.
Hey, listen, someone needed to hear that. So, and I enjoyed the conversation and I feel deepened from it.
Likewise.
So the announcement is that Kylie and I are going to be having a child.
Yeah. Surprise!
Surprise!
This is our gender reveal, except for we're not finding out the gender, but...
Yeah, this is our baby reveal.
Our baby reveal, correct.
Yeah, and we're not married, so we're doing it out of wedlock, which is great. I feel like that's a good rebellion against the Catholic Church for my upbringing. You know? We're getting married while you're pregnant, like 8 months. Wouldn't that be sweet in the pictures? Just to send to my, you know, old priest, like, hey... Still not married.
Yeah, you know, I think as everything...
I say this all joking.
I know, but...
I don't actually care, and I don't even remember my priest's name.
It all comes down to the commitments and vows we make to one another, not to a state, but I hear you.
I just think it's funny that people... It's not funny. It's awful that people feel, like, completely persecuted because of that. So much that, so that in our... origin story, we say that Mary never did it before she had Jesus. But that's a whole other conversation. We don't need to get into Immaculate Conception and all those
Although. I'm here for the magicness of it, potentially. Yeah. I'm here for the mystery.
Yeah, it's the mystery that everyone came up with after they had sex when you weren't allowed. Yeah.
No, babe, you got to go deeper.
And sure. All right, well, I will through the birth of a child.
Perfect.
So we're having a kid. We think, can we say what gender we think the kid is? Or do we want to share that?
Sure, babe.
What do we think it is?
Well, what if we're wrong?
That's great. It's documented. I think that's a risk we're willing to take.
I mean,
as my brother said, well, you got a 50-50 chance, you know? And I'm like, way to play the game. Like,
yeah.
Put your hat in the ring, buddy. John, if you're listening, put your hat in the ring.
Here's what I'll say is, either way, we're over the moon and very excited for this next chapter. Intuitively, I feel it's a girl, but we'll see. We don't
know. Yeah, we think it might be a girl. My dad was saying, he's like, you know, a lot of guys in the Groves lineage, like a lot of men. I'm like, that's actually true. But the firstborns, no, my cousins, they're both guys. Like my sister, though, born first. I said that to him. I'm like, yeah, but she came first. He's like, oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, it could be. So we're having a kid, and I'm curious, babe, what are you most excited about for having a child together? Or just having a child. And, of course, insert any things you're excited about with me. That'd be great.
Yeah, you know, it's been such a long journey to get to this moment of...
You sound like a dad telling or a mom telling a story of how they walked to school uphill both ways.
No, but for
you know
me,
I mean?
I wasn't the woman who was like, I only want to be a mother. And again, for all of you who resonate with that, that's beautiful. But for me, I had such serious fear around becoming a mother.
Yeah.
And it was very important to me to not recreate family constellations or patterns that I had been born into. Like I needed something to be different in order to step into this journey into motherhood with clarity and with with clarity and what I call coherency, which means all parts of me are aligned when making this decision.
Mm-hmm.
And as I don't know if we've ever talked about this on the podcast, our journey with babies and conception and timeline, have we?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Break it down, babe.
Yeah, I mean, the long and short of it, Mark has always wanted children. He's always been very clear about his desire to be a father. And I have always been historically unclear about not necessarily the choice to have children, but the timeline on which to have them. Because what felt important for me in my preconception path was that I got to a place where I felt congruent, where I felt like, yes, I am so fully here for this next chapter. And the language I use to describe that is like, I've like been initiated out of maiden and into mother. Like I can actually hold the energetic of mother. For me, I've walked a preconception path with the help of a few guides for the last 3 years of really preparing myself to step through and bring a life into this world. And one of my mentors always asked me, he's like, well, how are you going to steward life? And it was such a big question. I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah, how are we going to steward a new life onto this planet? And what does that mean for us? And what does that look like for us? And of course, those are really big questions. And I think we'll continue to ask ourselves those questions every step along the way. But for me, I'm really excited because it feels like I'm in such a good place with it. Like, it feels good because I waited, I listened, I actually honored what felt true. And I did the work to get to this place where it felt easy. And I know everybody's like, well, you'll never be ready. And it's like, no, I actually do feel really ready. Like, I'm so excited to be a mother. And, you know, throughout the last, because I'm 7 months pregnant now, throughout the last 7 months, so much has been reorienting, like all of my values of what matters and yeah, how life just reprioritizes itself when you are actually expecting. You're like, oh gosh, this that was like on number five of my to-do list or next step to take just moved all the way up to number one. And so, yeah, I'm excited. First and foremost, I'm excited for this transition with you into parenthood and all of the beautiful lessons and adventures it will take us on. And I'm excited that you and I have a really strong foundation to be able to navigate that with kindness, with compassion most of the time, and with like a lot of skills and a lot of community support. We're not alone. And that excites me deeply. And, you know, I'm really excited to meet this soul. I'm always just so curious. I'm like, who chose us as their parents? And what are they going to teach us? And what are we going to learn from them? And yeah, I feel like everything's changing and I'm really excited for the next chapter.
Yeah, me too. I'm very excited. I'm excited that you are the portal that this child is coming into the world through, from the world, of the world, to witness you as a mother too. I mean, I'm very grateful that you're going to be this kid's mom because you're so thoughtful and so intentional about everything. And you have great disciplinary practices. I mean, in terms of your own self-discipline. So, yeah.
What do you mean by that?
I'm like, you got good, you know, your morning rituals are very, you're very disciplined in anything you do in a good way, which is going to be great. And
so
you
funny.
Really value sleep. So that's going to be challenged, potentially. I value sleep too, but I'm probably better at not having as much. But you sent me an Instagram reel recently that tried to convince me that women need more sleep than men due to hormonal reasons.
Yeah, that's inaccurate.
Yeah, which seemed, I'm not trained in that specific area. So I was just like, yeah, that's probably true.
I was like, thank you, Dr. blah, 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 for validating my sleep needs.
My need for 9 hours a night.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited about becoming a father. One thing that's really interesting about it too is that I don't know how to be a father. You know, I think I was thinking about this the other day because I was telling you that life's been kind of so busy that I haven't had a chance to really process being a dad. And I'd say part of that was probably also avoidance of processing being a dad. Not in a bad way, but just like I wanted to be present and intentional with the thoughts about it. And dad to a girl or a boy doesn't really, you know, both of those feel like really sacred jobs. And, you know, talking to our friends who have children and being like, wow, like they're thinking about social media and technology and all these things that we're going to have to think about, which I'm actually quite interested in considering. And how does someone, you know, because I think one of the main sort of challenges or conflicts is, well, this kid's friends all have phones, so how are they going to engage with the world and with their friends without da 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 da? Again, we don't have to worry about that for a while, thank the fucking God. But because by then, maybe you just have to choose to get a neurochip or some fucking bullshit, which we're not getting. But my point being that there's so many things to consider, so many things I don't know anything about. And I was thinking about how so much of the time that I spent talking to my father was about relationships when I was younger and in, you know, throughout my life. But I was like, I'm so excited to talk to him about this. That feels really beautiful. And my mom too, but I think as a dad, it's different. My mom, you'll just tell me what I need to do, which is great. Which I'm really, it's so nice to experience the opportunity to connect through asking for support, which I think is a challenge for a lot of people. And with community, how important that is.
Yeah. You're going to be such a beautiful dad.
Thanks.
And you're going to learn a lot.
Yeah, I was telling you, and I might have said this on the pod before, but I don't think so. But I had coffee and like a smoothie bowl with Stefanos Fondos. And if you've listened to the podcast, he's been a guest. He's great. And in his Australian accent, which I'm about to butcher, let me just put that ahead. He had just had his daughter. I think she was like him and Christine. I think she was like a month old, maybe 6 weeks or 8 weeks. And he was like, you think you know? You don't know anything. That was a pretty bad accent. Normally I can kind of pull him off, but sorry, Stefanos. But he's like, you don't know anything. And I was like, yeah, I hear you. And I think that's actually a really beautiful thing too, is to enter, which I'm always in it, but to like really be in the role of student, you know? And then of course I'll have opinions and thoughts and feelings about parenting and what I'm experiencing in real time, which I'm pretty pumped for. What are you most afraid of?
In what way? Just in general, or? Because I have a couple fears that have been...
No, don't bring both of them.
That feel like they're probably the most alive, and one of them being like a lack of support as the mom.
Yeah.
That definitely, yeah, has felt like so real. And I don't know if that's because it's probably what my mom's experience was. Like my mom didn't have any.
My mom too.
Like she didn't have any support. And so my system doesn't even know what support looks like in that. Luckily, my twin sister gave birth to my nephew Moses last year. And she's modeled and created such a supportive ecosystem. But yeah, there's just been like such a deep desire for like support and also to be surrounded by other moms who are walking a similar path, who are asking similar questions, who want to raise their children close to the earth and really intentionally. And so, yeah, I'd say my fear is like not having that and like having just such a deep desire for that. And so, yeah, it's like, I guess one of my fears is like, will I even have time to like sit for...
To worry about it? Oh, for yourself, you mean?
Well, yeah, like, you know, it's like, that's maybe more of the topical fear is like, will I even just have 30 minutes to myself for the next couple of years?
And all the moms listening are like, no.
All the moms are like, yeah, say goodbye to personal time and space. But you know what? As somebody who is such an internal person who contemplates, who really enjoys their internal world and connecting with the world and in various ways, I am like, I hope we create an ecosystem where there is still an opportunity for me to connect and nourish myself in ways that feel, yeah.
Well, listen, good. It is a priority to me that you feel supported and that you still get your time to go inside and do the thing. Who knows? Biology, though, will take over with some chemicals and you'll be like...
That's what I'm saying. Right. I don't really know if that... like
it's good to document this.
It doesn't feel like...
We'll be checking back in after the baby's born to have to see how you're doing with that, how I'm doing with supporting you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, another thing is the shift in our family dynamic. You know, like you and I've grieved already, like the shift from coupledom into parentdom is what I'm guessing calling it in this moment. But of like how we're going to shift, like our relationship absolutely will shift. And like there's been grief around that of like, oh my gosh, it's not just Mark and I adventuring the planet and doing, I mean, see now even it brings tears to my eyes because I really enjoyed that. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, it's not going to be that, but it's going to be something so beautiful and different in its own way. But I'm like, you know, with any unknown, I'm like, well, what is that going to look like? And how can Mark and I support ourselves through this transition so that we're able to stay connected, so that, you know, I've asked a lot of moms, you know, what was the biggest challenge for them in their relationships? And wow, was there a lot of content there? And I actually think a lot of it has to do with environmental or external factors of just how the nuclear family system is set up and how, you know, in our culture, both parents usually have to work to make ends meet. Like there's like so much demands that it just like is stacked on two adult shoulders that I feel like, of course, there's going to be so much anger, resentment, like conflict potentially in the relationship dynamic. And so I'm like, yeah, I'm aware of that. And so I'm also like, how do we support each other through that as well, so that we don't kind of just fall into even just like roles we witnessed growing up of like provided for. Like, I hate that because I think each party is providing something, but it's like the responsibility of like becomes separated instead of like collaborative, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. or isolating when like I desire collaborative, nourishing, resourced ecosystem. And that's more than just you, right? It's, I think having a community is what allows that to move with more ease in our relationship dynamic, but it's both and, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, when I talk to men about their experience of becoming fathers, often, you know, can be a feeling like, where do I fit in anymore? Because the baby needs mom mainly. And mom is connected on such a every level with the child. And the man wants to be supportive in the way that evolutionarily in most recent history, but not true of all history, is to provide. And so is often not at home. And then is also like, I don't have the milk to give the baby. So like, I got to support mom. And I think I'm not sure if I'm accurately remembering these conversations or I'm just projecting my own fears, which is that like, where do I fit in anymore? Which I haven't really thought a lot about because it hasn't been present in front of me, but it's just present in this conversation of fearing how to handle that. Because I think I'll never forget when I heard years ago a psychologist talking, might not even be a psychologist, I can't remember, talking about how when the parent or the couple becomes a family, so there's the death of the coupledom, as you said, and then you're now the birth of a family, and there's more than one, or more than the two of you. And that need becomes associated, or sorry, touch becomes associated with need for the mother. So like the baby's constantly needs, constantly. And then if the husband touches, it's also actually technically a need too, right? Like intimacy and connection. And so I think those are very real things that we have to think about and consider. And also for a lot of what I'm discovering through going through it is a lot of couples don't have those conversations. Like they're not navigating that. There's, I think for men, and I'm not speaking for all men, but I think this is often true for men, is like, there's not even space for me to have that experience because it's all about mom. So then there's no space for me to have that experience. Much like I've been talking to a lot of men about just how it feels to be a provider and like how the world actually shames because of, you know, patriarchy, that the world actually doesn't even have space for what is the cost of being the provider? Like, what do you miss out on as the provider? And if it's seen as this like resentful thing of like, well, this is how the world is designed so you could get power and provide, then there's not really, it seems like there can be a reluctance of the partner to appreciate or say thank you or, you know, does that make sense? I've just said a lot of things, so.
Yeah, you know, with, you know, I come back to like, again, the culture and the way things are, you know, like, in this system. Yeah, this whole provider conversation. It's almost like, as I hear you speak into this, and I'd be curious to hear your thoughts, but it's like almost becoming a victim of the role.
No.
Or the way the system has set up.
That's not how I meant it. Like, I don't mean that like, woe is me, I'm a provider, no one cares about my feelings.
No, but that's, there's like a, I'm not free to choose. Like, it feels like I'm,
oh, you,
do you
mean,
know what I
mean? Like actually not a victim to the role, not playing victim.
Right, yeah.
Okay,
like,
yes.
Like there's,
well, there, yeah, there like is often not an option. And sometimes both parents have to, a lot of the times, especially in today's, with the cost of everything today, the United States doesn't have maternity leaves. Really, it's like 3 weeks after you have a baby, you're supposed to go back to work. It's ridiculous.
Six weeks,
still ridiculous.
Oh my gosh, terrible.
You know, and I think of like all the things that are happening in the world, and it's like, can you source all that back to the fact that there's not actually a value in the culture for parent-child attachment? And I'm like, yeah, actually, there's so much to go back on that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's just it, is our culture doesn't honor life.
No,
like,
and
it, you know, it's desecrated. It's desecrated.
Do you mean in terms of how we treat the planet?
I mean, in terms of how we treat the planet, but in terms of how we treat humans too, like,
yeah,
or families or villages or anything. Like, it's not easy to stay connected to self and or other in this, I think, in this culture. But I just think it's an interesting conversation because, again, I don't know the way through it. But I feel like sometimes if resentment is there, right, for having to be something, well, then it's like, well, it has to come back to like, well, what are the solutions and what's, how can we collaborate? You know, like, what's the way through?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the answer to that question, but I always come back to, well, we have to build a resourced and integrated ecosystem or a village. So that we can, I don't know, feel more supported, I guess, or not alone in the process.
Well, one of the things that we've navigated, and the reason I brought up for you watching or listening, is that we navigated the transition for Kylie to be able to, you know, grow our baby and you know, take care of herself and do all that kind of stuff, not experience massive amounts of stress, you know, during this time. That I'm like, all right, well, she's just not working. And so I'm paying for things. And it's been interesting to navigate in a world that's like equal opportunity, no gender roles, no this. It's like, oh, how do we end up here? You know, on what history and feminism and all the things we're trying to deconstruct. And I think it's because it wasn't entered intentionally and with communication, that historically we just kind of fell into our roles.
Yeah.
And now we're like choosing our roles. And I know Esther Perel talks about that of like, you know, same sex couples, when they have children, choose the parent based on skill set, not on gender.
Yeah.
And she said, why don't we have space for that in the world? You're definitely a much better mother, though. Let's be very clear on that. But yeah, what do you think about, what do you think is, or maybe you can just speak to your experience of that. And just because I think it would be helpful for people, and it was helpful for me when we talked through it.
Yeah, I, as somebody who historically had a lot of resistance to receiving support, because I didn't want to recreate codependent dynamics where I was sourcing that safety and security through you at the expense of my needs or my voice or my purpose or my life.
We talk about that in Let It Burn Part 1 and 2.
Right,
so
right.
If you're curious about the historical aspect.
Yeah, like
details.
I had to get to a place of financial independence, essentially, to be able to then get to a place where it's like, hey, now I'm interested in entering into this consciously, where there's a reprioritization of my time, my energy, and my needs of not only gestation, although as a caveat, I do feel like, you know, writing a book at this time has not necessarily been a walk in the park for me and, or us, right?
Like, no.
I'm still providing in some ways. So I feel.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I don't want to make it sound like,
no, I know.
Like you're just sitting around eating bonbons.
Right. Like, you know? like hold on.
You're on a baby.
I'm like, but that's besides the point, because even amidst that conversation with the book and, you know, the financial stuff, was a desire for a trust or for the conversation of like, I want to be a mother and I don't want to have to worry about bringing in 50% or, you know, my financial well-being for the first year is what I said. And I think, you know, in my experience initially, that brought up a lot for you, which I totally understand. And I think that's what you're speaking to right now in terms of like the resentment and or the like pressure.
Yeah, it wasn't really resentment. It was more like just pressure. All of a sudden I'm like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure. You know, for me, one of the struggles in appreciation and gratitude, I think historically, and hopefully I'm getting better at this, was just the vulnerability and or even the fact of bringing it up that I'm not actually providing. Like there's a shame that's associated with being able to receive.
Yeah, that
because I now need you. And so I had shame around that. I didn't want to need you. But I knew, like, at least for me, one of the steps in this process of becoming a mother was to actually be able to receive support, not even just from you, but from, you know, everybody in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And feeling like I could come to you and comfortably say that. And I also, you know, on the receiving end of that, hear the desire for more appreciation and gratitude for taking on that. And I'm so incredibly grateful that we're able to have these conversations and look at and find a way to support our family and the needs of me too. But, you know, I think in that it's like, for me, there's such a desire for collaboration as well. It's like, well, how do we meet your needs, you know?
Yeah, it was such a, and for you listening, it's not like I'm trying to get a gratitude here from Kai. What I was pointing out is that when I was navigating the request, you know, our desire together collaboratively of like, what's best for our kid and what's best for you as the mom to be in the best situation, feeling emotionally, somatically, all that, and making that choice together and you bringing that need and desire. And then navigating the emotions that came up for me in doing that, the pressure all of a sudden, and then, wait, now you're not working. And pre, you're actually growing a fucking baby, which is crazy. There's still a part of me that was like, oh, yeah, but you're chilling while I'm working, even though that's not obviously what's going on. And I know in the first trimester, there was a lot of nausea just in general, like baseline. And I'm sure for any moms, you know what I'm talking about. But what was cool and the thing that I just love about us is that I was able to bring my experience, just that I felt shame about how I was feeling.
Yeah, totally.
Right. And I could bring it to you and say, I feel shame about this, but this is the judgment that I'm having or the thing I'm thinking. And you were like, oh, do you need to hear how appreciative I am? And I was like, yeah, I do. And you're like, oh my God. And you shared kind of what you just shared previously. And I remember telling my men's group about the experience just because I'm just constantly reminded of how powerful good relating is and how powerful good containers of safety are. Because the thing I was most ashamed of thinking or feeling that would have just boiled and stirred and, you know, till it came out in some sort of passive aggressive bullshit way, which it doesn't, because we have the ability to say, like, here's something that's coming up for me, not necessarily proud of it, but it's here. Can we hold it? And you always do such a gracious job of holding those things that I'm afraid to be seen. So thank you.
Thank you for continuing to bring them. Always.
Well, the alternative is not. And then I think about how not bringing them shows up and how that's affected my previous life and relationships.
So terrified to even, you know, for me personally, to bring that request even forward. Like, you know, it's so interesting. It's like, oh my gosh, am I even allowed to potentially desire this? Or, I don't know. It was just so, it felt so vulnerable because it mattered so much that I was just like.
I like that it wasn't an expectation, you know, and that it was a conversation. And also because I think of like some conversations that happen in, you know, where it's like, well, a real man would just take care of me. A real man, a king, would handle all my needs so I can float through the world as a queen. You know, and I, like that kind of stuff.
That's called shame.
Right. That kind of stuff creates shame for the experience. Yeah. And, you know, that's why I was saying earlier that in the conversation that's happened, the very appropriate and important conversation about the redistribution of power and the conversation about the exploitation of power is, and, you know, I was talking to Connor about this the other day, and if you're listening, I did a podcast with Connor the other day. I'm not sure if it's going to come out after this one, but we were just talking about how there is sometimes a lack of space for the male's experience because there's an idea that they've taken up all the space. So even emotionally, there's no space. But yet we desire emotion from men. So there's like, you know, it's when you're in containers of men's groups, it's a lot easier to process some of these feelings, but it's kind of a dead end if you don't bring that feeling back to your partnerships.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, you can process it and come up with the best words or, you know, what you need to do when you go back to your relationship to talk about it. But that's why I think male containers for men and women for women, or whatever you feel comfortable and safe with, are so important.
My gosh. Everything. Just to clear all of the emotional debris, get clear, let it all out, let all the shadows, let all the stories kind of simmer, or not even simmer, but just like be brought forward in a really contained space where likely the other people in the group have experienced or at least have some inkling of an understanding. Because then it like kind of moves through your system and you're like, oh, I know I'm able to see this from a way clearer perspective and receive the wisdom of somebody maybe who's already walked a similar path, and then to bring that back into our relationship. Oh,
and
my
validation
gosh.
Too.
Yeah, of course.
Know, when you bring it to other, because, you know, if I was to bring that to other women, my just emotional experience of that process, I'd be like, who are you to feel that way? You know, it can be that response. Like, she's growing a baby. How dare you? And it's like, no, I get that. It's both and here.
But that's the whole point of what even what I'm talking about is like there has to be a collaborative understanding of both sides of the experience.
Yeah.
And we have to work through what's coming up on both sides in order to like find the third door. in order to find a new template or a new way of doing things. Because our past templates are like, you know, not working.
Having a kid requires collaboration.
Right. And so it's like, no, we need to actually bring all of this to the table. And, you know, I think we're pretty good at bringing a lot to the table.
Yeah, I agree. We are. Not a lot sits in the ether till, not for long at least.
No.
No. It demands to be brought forward because that's alignment. You know, coming right back to the beginning, that's, it's not that elusive when you know the feeling of it. You know, it's kind of like when you've been bowling in the zone, you know, hot down the, what is it? The, what is it called?
What?
The bowling alley, the alley. Oh. When you've been bowling in the zone, hitting strikes, that's alignment. And then all of a sudden when you got her ball a few, you know, the feeling, you don't want to go back. You know, it's kind of like when you choose to live your life from a place of integrity with how you want to show up and who you want to be. That is liberation, because if you know you've been in alignment with your own values and a relationship ends or a conversation's hard, you're still proud of yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm very proud of what we continue to create.
Me too, love. Me too. And I think all of our stuff, you know, kind of to go back to what you were mentioning at the beginning of the podcast, of like, it's so interesting that we've gone through pretty big transitions or endings, or, you know, and we still had to repeat a pattern, or we still had to go through a similar dynamic, maybe to a different degree. I would say definitely to a different degree.
Mm-hmm.
But this really feels to me that even these deeper imprints or these deeper templates that are wanting to be shifted, are wanting to be worked through, that are wanting to be brought into the light of awareness, are going to come up along the way, like your pattern of isolation, my pattern of isolation, like all of our different survival strategies. They're all just going to show up. And it's like, at least we have some level of awareness, or at least have the support in our lives to like, hey, see this blind spot? Or hey, you're actually withdrawing? Or hey, you're actually doing the same thing you've historically done to soothe or regulate by pulling away, withdrawing, relying on, like, you're doing it now, but it just looks different. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's an opportunity to still see how our strategies show up and then, you know, again, meet them and work through them. Obviously, I think for us, they still show up to a different degree, but then we catch them quick because we're like, oh, that doesn't feel good, actually. I want to be closer to Mark, you know?
It's going to be interesting to experience those patterns with a kid.
I know.
You know, I was thinking about that. You know, you hit your limitations of your capacity.
Right.
You know, and children demand presence. I mean, that's necessary. That's everything. And I'm so excited for that. And I'm really excited for that. I'm excited to be broadened by the experience of parenthood.
Yeah. One of my mentors, and actually our doula, has shared with me, like, this soul is coming to support both you and Mark in, like, I mean, to use her words, but like raising your consciousness. And I think that's the point of all growth and evolution, is to actually expand.
And all children.
And all children is to expand, grow, and evolve. You know,
yeah.
That's the whole point. But I just laugh because I'm like, oh, we're just in for such a ride.
Oh, man, it's going to be a beautiful ride. I'm very excited, babe. Wouldn't rather be on it with anyone else. You're my ride or die.
Same, love.
Well, thanks for coming back on.
Yeah, it's been a minute. So
it is. So maybe we're gonna get you back on before, and we'll bring on the baby for an interview too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
I'm sure.
My childhood will have some opinions, some thoughts, some feelings. Might have its own podcast.
Oh my gosh, could you imagine? Dad, nah. Stop talking.
I think
I'm going to take over.
Right? Yeah. I forget whose kid said that to him. Dad, be quiet. Oh, Sly's kid.
Yeah.
That's funny. And Sylvester's been a guest on the podcast many times. I think three now, too. He's close to you.
Wow.
Shit, I know.
Way to go, Sly.
I know. Babe, thanks for coming on. Thanks for being here. Thanks for loving me. Thanks for sharing your wisdom.
Thanks for having me, love.
And for all those listening, thanks for being part of our journey and continuing to join us. And I want to give a shout out to, we're recording in Vegas. So first off, shout out to Vegas, because whoever knew that I would have this place be home for transitions. Gosh, I never would have guessed that. You know, it's like, I only thought kids were made here and I didn't think they were raised here. No offense, because you were raised here. But I just never thought in Vegas families existed. When you go to the Strip and your shadow's living, you're not thinking about that. And secondly, to we're recording in Level 9 Studios. So if you want to record podcasts, come out here and use it. It's really a tremendous place. And as you could tell, these mics are rich. Yeah. So thanks, Scott. Appreciate you. He's the owner. So make sure you hit him up. Thanks, babe. Love you.
Love you.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. If this episode resonated with you, one of the best ways to support the show is to go subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any more. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to it, or share the episode with your community on Instagram or whatever social place you like to hang out. This helps get it into more people's ears, and I'm so grateful for your support always. Thanks again for tuning in. Much love.